it is high time the Chinese government actually had some sense that it would face consequences.
An international coalition wants a closer look taken at China's civil rights record. This is Thursday, the 10th of September, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also coming your way, the United States will reduce its number of troops in Afghanistan. That was announced the same day of an unsuccessful attack on a highly placed Afghan official. One of the trials on a COVID vaccine has been put on hold, and you'll hear about a major anti-pollution effort in Australia. It is all on today's VOA Asia. A global coalition of 321 civil society groups from 60 countries is calling for China to face greater scrutiny for its alleged systemic and serious human rights violations. The coalition plans to demand an end to China's impunity at the UN Human Rights Council during the Council's upcoming session next week. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The group sent an open letter to the UN Secretary General and UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, raising its concerns about China's human rights record. The signatories stressed the need to address what they call rampant human rights violations across China, including in Hong Kong, Tibet, and the northwestern province of Xinjiang. China Director at Human Rights Watch, Sophie Richardson, says the sheer magnitude of the violations committed inside China and outside the country warrant a fundamental different response from the UN Human Rights Council.
It is high time the Chinese government actually had some sense that it would face consequences for doing things like continuing to arbitrarily detain a million people simply on the basis of their ethnic identity, and for a slew of other serious violations.
1 million, mainly Muslim Uyghurs, reportedly are incarcerated in so-called re-education camps in Xinjiang. In its statement, the coalition highlights China's efforts to distort the mandate of the UN Human Rights Council. It says China persecutes activists who seek redress from repression. It says the government in Beijing opposes initiatives to shine a light on its alleged serious rights violations and international crimes committed in countries around the world. The Chinese government rejects the UN's assessment of its human rights record as gross interference. Geneva Director at Human Rights Watch, John Fisher, says the UN needs to act on the growing chorus of voices calling for China to be held accountable for its rights abuses.
And I think what has been striking around this appeal has been to see just so many NGOs from so many different countries not just expressing concern at China's suppression of rights within its own borders, which are serious enough and warrant scrutiny on their own terms, but also the global impact of China's contempt for human rights.
The global coalition is calling for a special session of the Human Rights Council to explore the range of violations by China's government. It urges the Council to establish an impartial and independent UN mechanism to closely monitor and report on China's human rights situation annually. It says the UN must insist that the government comply with its international human rights obligations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Chinese refugees fear deportation as Thailand increases cooperation with China. The breakaway territory of Somaliland opens a representative office in Taipei. More than 100 of Indonesia's healthcare workers have died from the coronavirus. Health experts say poor protocols in hospitals is one of the reasons. North Koreans mark the 72nd anniversary of Foundation Day with a routine display of loyalty, laying flowers and statues and portraits of their former leaders. India's coronavirus cases surged to 4.2 million, the second highest total in the world. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. We continue on VOA Asia. The clinical trial of one of the most promising vaccines for the coronavirus has been halted after one of the participants fell ill. However, scientists say there may be no link between the vaccine and the participant's illness. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Pharmaceutical firm AstraZeneca announced the pause of the trial Wednesday after one of the British participants fell ill, reportedly with transverse myelitis, inflammation of the spinal cord. The participant is expected to recover. The coronavirus vaccine developed by AstraZeneca and Oxford University is seen as one of the most promising of dozens under development around the world. After successful early-stage trials, it had moved to phase 3 testing in recent weeks, involving 30,000 participants in the United States, Britain, Brazil, and South Africa. Scientists emphasize that there is no indication yet that the participant's illness is linked to the vaccine.
You're giving the vaccine to very large numbers of people, and at any given time, randomly by chance, it's quite possible some of those participants may have health problems that happen to come up. So I think it's normal to expect to see these events, and what's critical is to then pause and to investigate in more detail.
That investigation is underway, though it's not clear how long it might take. Britain's health minister sought to assure the public.
It just shows how much of an emphasis we put on the safety of the vaccine, even though, of course, we're all desperate to see it work.
This week, 9 leading US and European vaccine developers issued a pledge to uphold safety standards for their vaccines. The US government launched Operation Warp Speed earlier this year, with almost $10 billion of funding to accelerate the development of a vaccine with a target date of January next year. The US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has told health departments across the country to draft vaccination plans by October. Globally, there are at least 7 vaccines undergoing phase 3 trials involving thousands of participants.
It's a slow process because it depends on how many people are being infected. And of course, that's spread across various different regions. And in different regions, you know that the number of cases every given week is varying from week to week.
Even if a vaccine is approved, scientists say it will take time to roll out.
We need to make large amounts of the vaccine. We need to fill it into little glass vials, and then we need to distribute it and then work out how to actually vaccinate people.
To date, only one vaccine has been approved, the so-called Sputnik V in Russia, which the government says will be rolled out to the Russian population starting in October. Experts have raised concerns about the vaccine's safety, as it has not entered phase 3 clinical trials. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Happening now in Asia, Indonesia's capital Jakarta will reinstate wide-scale social restrictions as soon as possible because a rise in coronavirus infections threatens to strain its health system. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. The U.S. military is reducing troops in Afghanistan. Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent.
I just got off the phone with General Frank McKenzie. He is the commander for U.S. Central Command, which oversees all of the military operations for the United States across the Middle East. And he told Voice of America and 2 other reporters that the U.S. was going to be withdrawing its troop numbers in Afghanistan from 8,600 to 4,500 in the late October, early November timeframe. He said that he was still concerned about the Taliban, that they still have not shown that they are going to break away from Al-Qaeda, and that they still continue violence against Afghan forces, even though they are not attacking U.S. forces at this point.
Afghanistan's warring factions were expected this week to begin their first direct peace talks in Qatar amid U.S.-led international calls for them to seize the historic opportunity to end the country's long war. Afghanistan's first vice president has survived a blast in Kabul Wednesday that killed at least 10 people and wounded several dozen others. Afghan officials said the explosion was caused by a planted roadside bomb. Aisha Tanzim reports from Islamabad.
Afghanistan's first vice president, Amrullah Saleh, was on his way to work early Wednesday when his convoy of vehicles was hit by a roadside bomb. Many of the blast's victims were pedestrians during the morning rush hour. Saleh escaped with minor wounds and uploaded a video message soon after on his official Facebook account for his followers. He says a number of his brave bodyguards were wounded and have been shifted to hospitals. He says he and his young son, Ibad Saleh, who was with him, were not harmed. But, he says, the explosion was so strong that it melted the glass off my bulletproof vehicle and left minor wounds to my face and hand. Eyewitnesses say the explosion was in an area where shops were selling gas cylinders for cooking and heating. Some of those cylinders caught fire and caused secondary explosions. Saleh also apologized to people who lost their lives or property in the blast. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani and European Union representatives in Afghanistan condemned the attack. The EU called it a desperate act by spoilers of peace efforts. The attack comes ahead of a first round of peace negotiations between the Taliban and a team of Afghans, including government representatives. The talks, scheduled to be held in Doha, have been delayed over a Taliban request for the release of 6 high-profile prisoners wanted by Australia and France. Taliban officials have denied responsibility for the attack Wednesday. Saleh has been targeted multiple times before. Last year, an assault on his offices just before presidential elections killed 20 people. Aisha Tanzeem, VOA News, Islamabad.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube. This news from VOA Asia. The United States is blocking visas for certain Chinese graduate students and researchers to prevent them from stealing sensitive research. That according to the acting head of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. For the first time in Australia, teenagers have launched a class action lawsuit on behalf of young people around the world to stop the extension of a coal mine in the state of New South Wales. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Anxiety over global warming is driving this teenage campaign to stop the expansion of a coal mine near Gunnedah, 430 kilometres northwest of Sydney, in the state of New South Wales. The class action lawsuit asserts that Australia's Environment Minister Susan Ley has a legal duty to protect young people and should reject the proposal. The claimants are between the ages of 13 and 17. They argue that by burning coal, climate change will be made worse, harming their future. Rather than making the claim under environmental legislation, the case asserts the Australian government has a common law duty of care. The high school students filed an injunction Tuesday in Australia's federal court. The expansion has been approved by an independent planning commission, which ruled the project was in the public interest. But the final decision rests with federal authorities. The federal government hasn't commented on the lawsuit because the matter is before the courts. 16-year-old Laura Kerwan is one of the teenage plaintiffs. She told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation how she was scared about the future.
I'm really worried. Like, climate anxiety, it affects me, and I know many, many people that it affects. It's really, really scary to think about the future and not know whether we'll have a safe time. I'm involved in this case because climate change is really important and it's only getting worse. I think that it's really important that the Federal Environment Minister is aware that she should be protecting the younger generations.
Whitehaven Coal, the resources company behind the mine expansion, has said it would bring social and economic benefits to the region, including up to 450 jobs and millions of dollars in direct capital investment. It hasn't yet commented on the lawsuit. Legal experts believe that given its complexity, the case will be tough for the high school students to win. If they do, it could have huge ramifications for other new coal mines in Australia. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
A new documentary that follows Swedish teen climate activist Greta Thunberg's rise from a school protester to Time magazine's Person of the Year premiered at the Venice Film Festival this month. VOA's David Byrd tells us about I Am Greta.
Filmmaker Nathan Grossman first met Greta Thunberg when she was 15 and staged a school strike for climate change at Sweden's parliament. He asked to follow her for what he thought would be a three-week shoot. Grossman believed that Thunberg would be one of many activists he profiled in his film. What happened was a year-long project that included visits with heads of state, with Pope Francis at the Vatican, rallies in front of thousands of supporters, and Thunberg's speech to the UN General Assembly in New York. Grossman told the Reuters news agency that he had no idea Thunberg would have such worldwide reach.
I was also thinking, like, Jesus, like, everything is going so quickly. What a weird kind of rush of train this is, in the sense that, like, we're standing here with the Pope, and just like 8-9 months ago, she started this school strike, which I think says a lot about how her timing and also the way that she kind of expresses herself in this very kind of frank and articulate way, how that translated so well into the world.
Grossman also accompanied Thunberg when she sailed across the Atlantic in a racing sailboat to leave as small a carbon footprint as possible. The voyage took more than 2 weeks, and the filmmaker says he wanted to give audiences a glimpse of what it was like to be Greta.
Just I tried to kind of follow them and her and her father in this crazy journey as much as I can. And I think the objective has always been to kind of take the camera and bring it down to her perspective, because I think we've seen a lot of her in the news media. She's been doing so many interviews. And I wanted to bring the viewer closer to, but how does it feel then to kind of go from nothing to become this very famous climate activist.
The film had its premiere at the Venice Film Festival earlier this month in Italy. In a remote news conference, Thunberg said that she thinks that Grossman captured her well.
You did succeed in framing me as myself, and not the person that media frames me to be, but not the angry, naive child who sits in the United Nations General Assembly screaming at world leaders, because that's not the person I am. So I think he definitely made me seem like a shy, nerdy person, which is the person that I am.
One of the arguments that has often been used to slow action on climate change is that it is too expensive. Greta Thunberg said by remote that the COVID-19 crisis has shown that world leaders can work together and spend huge amounts of money if they want to.
Because this is such a crisis and we aren't able to handle two crises at the same time, then all other things have been put on hold. And that is just how you... No one expected anything else than that. But now, yeah, we definitely need to understand and realize the urgency of the climate crisis and treat it as a crisis, because otherwise we won't be able to achieve real change.
I Am Greta will air on Hulu in the United States beginning November 13th. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
Are my pets safe from coronavirus? There's no current evidence that cats and dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
We continue on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg said that with the U.S. election coming up, media companies, including Facebook, have to prepare the American people for the possibility that the results will not be known right away.
One of the things that I think we and other media need to start doing is preparing the American people that there's nothing illegitimate about this election taking additional days or even weeks to make sure that all the votes are counted. In fact, that might be important to make sure that this is a legitimate and fair election. So we're going to do a bunch of different messaging around that just to make sure that people know that that's normal. So if one of the candidates in any of the races claims victory before there's a consensus result, then we're going to add some informational context to that post directly saying that that there's no consensus result yet.
Zuckerberg said in an interview with Axios on HBO, Facebook plans to add some informational context to potential posts of candidates claiming victory before there's a consensus result. Facebook had been criticized for its role in the 2016 U.S. elections, having been slow to respond to interference campaigns on its platform then, but is now making efforts to combat that interference. Facebook began verifying the identity of ad buyers in 2018 and recently said it will restrict new political ads in the 7 days before the election. You're listening to VOA Asia. New York City has always attracted creative people, those who are happy to wait tables in the evening as long as it pays the bills, only to run to auditions and have time for their art during the day. However, the coronavirus pandemic has forced over 1,000 Big Apple restaurants to close, and that means no jobs for the New York City bohemia. Anna Nelson looked into how the New York art scene has been adapting to the new reality. Anna Rice narrates her story.
Among the tens of thousands of New York City waiters, many are aspiring artists or actors looking for a day job that'll pay the bills. They're following in the famous footsteps of artists like Sandra Bullock and Jennifer Aniston, and singers like Madonna and Mariah Carey. But over 1,000 New York City restaurants were forced to close because of COVID-19, and tens of thousands of jobs disappeared. Jen Lyon is a concert promoter. She says she has noticed fewer talented musicians available for work since COVID. Many have left New York City for good because restaurants and nightclubs are closed and can't accommodate them.
The Lady Gaga story. If Lady Gaga didn't play in small clubs in New York, we wouldn't have a Lady Gaga. Aren't we glad we have her? Bruce Springsteen. You know, I mean, all of these artists that make the stories and soundtracks of our lives. All of those artists who were working within the restaurant industry to maintain living in New York to become artists have now had to make different life choices and have had to leave New York mainly.
Before the pandemic, one could spend an hour in line at restaurant Stardust on Broadway. Once inside the venue, waiters sang to entertain the customers.
You sing with all the voices of the mountain.
Today, Kevin Ray and Yulia Proshina, both former Stardust employees, are fundraising to support their fellow singer waiters.
It's about 200 or 200 plus people. Everybody is trying to find their own path right now. Some of them are creating their own music or something else. Some people are probably going in a totally different direction away from the music, which is kind of sad. We had a lot of talented people here.
Artist Rachel Berry has lived in New York for 15 years and worked many different jobs, but only bartending left her enough time and energy to focus on art.
The flexibility that comes with part-time work for full-time pay has essentially given me the creative freedom to do anything else I want on the side. I mean, you can't be creative, you can't perform, you can't write when your basic needs are in jeopardy.
I worry that we're going to lose something and who knows if we can get it back.
According to the U.S. Department of Labor, about 270,000 people worked in New York City restaurants before the pandemic. Today, it's less than 70,000. And while the dynamic continues to be like that, fewer and fewer young talented people will be able to afford to look for their dream in New York. For Anna Nelson in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. follow us on Twitter at BOA Asia. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at BOANews.com. Thank you for being with us today, and thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our BOA Asia team that includes Keith Lane, Doug Bernard, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please try to stay safe and enjoy your day.